right, folks, welcome back to the Anti-Diet Club podcast. Really happy to have you here with us. Wow, did you hear that? I just said with us. I meant to say with me today. Tamsin and I agreed probably a couple months back now that we would explore the idea of us doing solo episodes, which at the time sounded like a great idea. And Tamsin being the efficient, get to it, if it's on my list, it's going to get done type person, did it very swiftly. If you're a regular listener, you'll know her episode on menopause came out quite a few weeks ago now. And I have been completely procrastinating on my episode. And I think because in my mind, I've always known this episode was going to be about me. It's going to be quite self-reflective. And therefore, I've been avoiding it, truthfully. I probably want to begin by setting the scene. It's a Sunday afternoon. It's 4 p.m. I'm in my flat in Edinburgh. I just moved here to this part of town in Leith maybe about 6 weeks ago. So things, you know, I'm settled enough. Things still aren't totally how I want them to be. And I think I've been using that as an excuse whenever I have some alone time, particularly at weekends, to, you know, be putting pictures up and go buying new things that I probably don't need. But so I thought I would just get here. I would just plug in and land. I've just been on the phone for the last hour to my best pal. So I feel really good. I feel really regulated. I feel really relaxed. And I just thought I would get here and see what happens. This might be a 10-minute episode. It might be an hour episode. I might get to the end and decide I don't want to air it. I have no notes. I think that was one of the things that was keeping me procrastinating. If any of you have followed our podcast for a while, you'll know that I am a kind of self-identified perfectionist in recovery. So I have very high expectations of everything that I do. And today being the expectation that I would have notes and I would have compiled these notes for several weeks and they would have been thorough and there would have been a kind of journey that I would take you on that would feel kind of linear. And because I don't have any of that, it's likely going to feel jumbled and rambly. And I have absolutely no idea where this is going to go. So bear with me. Let's see. I think I probably want to just also talk to you like I'm talking to a friend. I think is the easiest way for me to do this solo episode. Tamsin said when she did hers, it was really odd not to have somebody on the other side to kind of riff off and sort of, you know, keep a conversation flowing. So what you maybe don't know about me is a lot of the time with my friends, a lot of my closest friends don't live nearby. They often, you know, are in different time zones or have kids or, you know, jobs that mean that a lot of the time we can't actually connect on the phone. So we leave voice notes. I don't know if any of you listeners out there are fans of voice notes. I'm a huge fan of voice notes. And I generally can leave a like 20-minute, 30-minute voice note for a friend. For some reason, that way of communicating really works for me. So I'm just treating this as a voice note to the Anti-Diet Club podcast listeners. I hope that sounds good to you. I can feel myself procrastinating, and I think maybe it's best just to name the kind of things that I want to explore today in this episode, I have kind of, in some ways, maybe been taking you on my journey the last couple of years, but also I'm aware that maybe not. I've maybe been like skirting around the edges a bit. And I think that's probably because I'm quite a private person. One of the reasons I find social media so hard. I definitely am a private person, and I feel like the lessons that I've learned or the things that I've kind of experienced over the last few years could be really helpful for you folks, because I'm guessing you tune into this podcast because you struggle with your relationship with food and your body, maybe both of those things. You'll all be at different parts of your journey, and I arguably might be further on in that journey than some of you. But I think it's really what I think what I want to share with you is how once you start this process of asking questions about yourself or about the world, once you start to feel maybe a sense of empowerment of it's possible to make some changes in your life, once you start to get really, really curious about yourself and your behaviors and how you navigate through the world, it's truly, truly life-changing. For the most part, I'm really grateful for it. Some days I wish I was in like complete oblivion again when it's tough, but most of the time I'm really grateful for it. It never fails to amaze me when I work with folks and we part ways after, you know, whether it's an 8-week group or whether it's 4 or 6 months private coaching, and I cannot hear from clients ever again. Sometimes I can hear from them often, sometimes very sporadically, but what never ceases to amaze me is how this work around food and body, when folks first come to me around, you know, binge eating or emotional eating or feeling, you know, really stuck in a diet cycle, and that's what they think is the problem and want to fix, essentially. And of course, through the work that we do kind of focus on those things. But what we begin to realize is that, and Tamsin and I say this all the time, right, that it's not actually about food. It's not actually about our body. It's actually about not feeling liberated, feeling caged, feeling stuck. And when I hear from folks who have kind of started that process that I'm talking about today, how it goes on to change their lives and how they can trace it back to this anti-diet work, this liberatory work, whether that's a career change or whether that's a choice to leave a relationship or start a new relationship or move country or whatever it is. I think it's like what comes when we get really truthfully honest with ourselves. And I think for those of you that don't know, my journey started in 2015 after 15 years of dieting. Every diet, my weight had yo-yoed up and down, up and down, up and down. And I was really stuck in this narrative of my body being the problem. And then I just decided to dedicate my life to it, right? This, like, I was a career dieter and I thought that I was never going to feel free until my body was how it needed to be. And of course, that's a trick. That's like a complete, you're going to lose your life to that shit. And I very nearly did because I lost a long time to it. And then once you start to do the work of changing your beliefs around bodies. And you'll know from the podcast, Samson and I talk a lot about why it is that we feel like we need to essentially contain ourselves, how we need to keep ourselves small. Anytime I had a body image episode or disruption or difficult feelings, I always felt, and the people that I was surrounded with at the time, the solution was always change your body to change how you feel. And I think the most empowering thing I've ever done in my life is actually question that. Question why it is that I need to be violent towards myself. And isn't that funny? Being violent, like in terms of restricting food, engaging in exercise purely for weight loss purposes, cutting ourselves in half with jeans that are too small for us, because we think it's going to get us to a place where we can then love ourselves or like ourselves or accept ourselves, which is truly wild that the goal is to like ourselves how we are. But in order to get there, we need to be so excruciatingly horrible to ourselves to get to that place. And I remember saying this to a client the other day, like, and then what? We're then, once we're accepting of ourselves, we can then like ourselves. Well, we haven't practiced that. How are we going to make that switch from loathing ourselves to loving ourselves when it comes to sort of meeting this condition or this criteria? It's truly wild. I've definitely been on a journey of learning to like myself and learning to understand what it is I truly want, what feels authentic. When you start to question this sense of control that we have around ourselves when it comes to our food, this control because we mistrust ourselves. We are not trusting of our body, of our choices. We think we're these kind of like wild, like animals that are like without rules, are just so unrestrained that things are just gonna, you know, move completely out of control if we take our foot off the pedal. And I think I can relate that to so much more than just food. I can relate it to a career that, for those of you that don't know, my first career was in interior design. I was really interested in art and design at school and went on to study interior architecture, actually. And that was my career, and I did really well at it because, you know, perfectionists generally do excel in what they put their mind to. And I really enjoyed it for a long time. And then I didn't. But I think back to those days, and I think I was so trapped in that job, in that career. And I think that's maybe when my dieting really ramped up, right? I was feeling like, well, you know, if I want to be the kind of person that has a mortgage and a car and I go on holidays, I've got to make a living. I've got to make a good living to like prove to myself and prove to everybody that I'm a success. Like, look at all these things, the holidays, the house, the car, the marriage, like this sense of proving to myself and everyone else. And that's like a mouse wheel. I don't know if any of you ever feel like you're just on this mouse wheel of performing life. And of course, I don't think I really I knew probably that there was something dying inside me, you know, like part of me was dying, but I didn't massively question it because a lot of the time, I think I was really numb. I was so disconnected, certainly from my body. And that happens when we're dieting, right? Like we have to disconnect from our body if we want to not respond to our hunger cues, if we want to not respond to our desires, if we want to not respond to essentially pleasure and joy, then it's like really sensible that we cut off from those feelings, those emotions. A lot of my clients say that they feel like they're just like a head moving around and their body is just this meat sack that kind of follows them. And I definitely felt that way for sure. And I think stopping dieting and beginning a yoga practice kind of started, my best friend says to me, it's when you started to melt, started to soften, started to like re-engage with my body, started to feel my body again. And of course, when you start to feel your body, you start to feel all the feelings and emotions and everything that you'd kind of tucked away or stuffed down. And I think I'm still like on that journey of like starting to really feel into the extremities of myself and my life. It's like slowly I'm beginning to reconnect, I think, with all of those parts of me. And I definitely cite yoga as being such a big part of that. My journey with yoga has definitely changed over the years, but it was the beginning of me self-inquiring. It was the beginning of me being kind to myself. It was the beginning of, certainly when I trained to be a yoga teacher, the beginning of recognizing there was something else for me out with that treadmill. And then, you know, you probably know I've spoken about this a lot on the podcast, but then I, you know, didn't necessarily stop dieting at the time. I then became obsessed with health and healthy eating and healthy living. And of course I recognize that now is just like dieting in a different form. That's when I studied nutrition and became a certified coach. And, you know, some of those things I really don't regret, but I think the ways in which I did that, I just didn't know any better at the time. I have a lot of compassion for, you know, how I kind of meandered through all of that. And then in 2018, I think it was, I graduated from a health coaching certification, and I started to take on coaching clients. And that's when my business began, September, I think, 2018. I remember my first client was a psychologist, and I felt really intimidated. But, you know, it just shows that how qualified or experienced somebody was, and she was so much older than me, but I still had something to offer. And I think it was just the space of being able to sit with someone who I recognized such disconnection in them, because I really felt it within myself. And I was just at the beginning of that journey too, of reconnecting with myself. And then in 2019, I think I haven't written any of this down, so this is all from memory, but it was the year I turned 40, so 4 years ago now, I think it would have been 2019, I quit my full-time interior design job. I just moved back to Edinburgh. I studied in Edinburgh, but I moved, my husband, my now ex-husband, is from Fife, further north. So lived there for like 13 years in the countryside. Moved back to the city. And I think looking back, that move back to the city was a real calling for community and connection. And people, you know, people who were in my life to that point, not all of the people, but a lot of them, I could just find that I just didn't have as much in common with them anymore. They were having children. I don't have children. And I was just seeking a kind of community of people that cherished and valued the same things as me and was excited about the same things as me. And I also felt too, living in the countryside, and I was married at that point in time, and I felt like my world was really small. Like my world was just my job and the project of my body. That was pretty much what occupied my life. And even the kind of like yoga in the beginning and walking, as I say, I lived in the countryside. It was all kind of body related. It was like Project Fix It related. And I felt like my world was really small. Like I was really operating in this tiny bubble, and it started to feel really claustrophobic. I needed my world to be bigger. And I wanted to so desperately to be in a community of people that understood me. And I think, like, don't we all, right, want to be surrounded by people who really get you? And I didn't have that, because all my school friends and university friends, none of them lived close by anymore. I have like my two best friends, one lives in New York and one lives in Newcastle. And I just really wanted to be living somewhere where there was other people on that same journey. So anyway, we moved to Edinburgh and I quit my job and I turned 40. And, you know, I think some people thought I was like having a midlife crisis. But I was just really seeking what I now see as like liberation. And what I mean by that is just like understanding myself better and having the courage to move towards that. Started my own business, coaching, yoga teaching. COVID happened, and my business did great during COVID. I mean, it kind of had to, right? Because I didn't qualify for any government assistance because my business was so new. But yeah, I was already coaching online. I wasn't teaching yoga online, but that transition was fairly easy. And I had a thriving business during COVID. People were struggling, and I suppose too was struggling, no longer with food and body stuff. You know, that, thank God, I'd done that work before COVID. I'd continue to make headway on that, and I felt really at peace with that kind of stuff. Pretty much, I would say, by the time the pandemic came around, that all that stuff was behind me, for the most part. But I definitely was using work as a coping mechanism, for sure. I was throwing myself into work because I was anxious with the pandemic. I guess, you know, I needed to keep an income coming in. I'd moved to the city, which was so much more expensive than when I was living in the countryside. My husband at the time is a photographer, self-employed photographer. So, you know, his work was all disappeared at the beginning of COVID, but he did qualify for assistance. So, you know, it turned out we were fine, but I definitely threw myself into work because people needed help, and I love helping people around food and body stuff. But it also suited me too, because it was a distraction from what was happening in my life. And you know, I'm pausing because I'm like, how much of this do I even want to share? Like, how much is helpful? How much feels too much? I'm not sure, but let's keep going. It's definitely fair to say that I was struggling in my relationship during the pandemic, during lockdown. Like whatever simmering away in the background, I don't know if any of you folks out there relate to this, but whatever is kind of simmering away, like comes to the forefront when everything else, like when your world becomes really small, like during lockdown. And you know, my ex-husband was, he's still alive, is a great guy, a really great guy. And we were best friends. We very rarely like argued about stuff. We enjoyed each other's company, and but we found ourselves in a position where we were flatmates, really. We were best pals, and not really anything beyond that. And I'm not really sure at which point that changed. I think it's just one of these gradual things that when it happens so slowly, you maybe just don't see it happening, or maybe you do and you're just don't have the capacity or the will or the knowledge, the skills as to how to like recover that. But also too, I think it was September 2020 that I started therapy, because I knew that things in my marriage wasn't good, and I am such a proponent of getting help, getting support. You know, I offer that to my clients. I have knowledge and skills because I've been through something, and I know how to help people through it. And I am always so, what's the word? Heartened, I think, when clients come to me, because I know how hard it is and how brave you have to be to seek out that help, because it's an acknowledgement of there's a problem. And I knew there was a problem, so I started therapy in 2020, and I'm still in therapy now. Is that almost 4 years, 3.5 years later? And I think it was this growing, it was this growing awareness of feeling like, you know how I said earlier, like slowly I was like starting to feel again and like connecting to the extremities of who I am. And I think there was always this knowing that I had never really had the opportunity in my life genuinely to explore my sexuality. I am 44, so I, you know, was born in 78. So like growing up in the 80s and the 90s, like, you know, I'm so envious when I see now the acceptance of young people's sexuality, especially it being something other than straight. I definitely didn't have that. And I don't even know if at that point in time in my life that I would even have been curious around that. I don't know. I can maybe trace things back to being about 18, and feeling like feeling drawn to certain women around certain things, but never really recognizing it as anything other than just like, you know, buddies or a kind of admiration around certain things. Who knows? But anyway, my first therapist helped a bit. She definitely encouraged a lot of compassion for what I was struggling with. And that, if nothing else, was really helpful. It was helpful because it was the first time I'd ever spoken out loud to anyone. Well, my best pal, Lorna, probably had heard whisperings about it, but in a real kind of way, in a way that felt like, well, if this is true, this is going to threaten like not only my marriage, but my whole life. And that was really scary. So yeah, I'm thinking about lots of clients that I have who, when they first share with me about their binge eating behaviors or their secret eating behaviors or the kinds of language and words that they talk, that they use to talk to themselves. It's often followed by this, oh my God, I've never said those words. I've never told anyone this before. You're the only person that knows this. And that's a really strange experience, because it's like once the words are out there, it's like it feels really real. And it can feel really emotional. And it definitely was for me. Like, I remember that summer, late summer, I guess, when I first started therapy, like, people are right when they say the first few sessions of therapy, or the first several sessions of therapy, you feel so much worse than feeling better. Oh my God, that was true for me. I switched therapists. I'm with a different therapist now because I feel like I really needed somebody to be quite strong with me. I felt like my first therapist, I learned quite quickly how to run circles around her and how to not answer the questions that she were asking me. And she would let me not answer the questions. And I knew that wasn't going to help me. So I sought out a woman who takes no shit. And I really appreciate that. She does not let me get away with any of that. It can be very confronting, but that was what I needed. And I started working with her, I think it was the following September, September 21. And by this point, I was, I think, safe to say, pretty tormented by what the feelings that were happening inside me and a further disconnection with my husband. And anyway, cut to, I guess, January 2022. And that's when, I guess, it all came to the surface. And my husband and I chose to separate. And I don't know if any of you folks out there have ever separated from someone. We were together for 23 years, married 18, so not a short relationship. And oh God, I remember just feeling like, oh my God, like I have literally set my life on fire. I've taken a match to it and I'm standing watching the blaze. And I mean, part of that was exhilarating. It was such a relief to name the things and talk about the things and also have my husband, ex-husband now, you know, really hold that and meet me at the table. And be supportive and not be judged, I think. Yeah. And, you know, I think the kind of bravery, the kind of courage that takes to be so honest with yourself and with the people close to you is so scary. But I think, like, I'd already had experience, albeit in a different kind of way, but to choose not to conform to beauty ideals, to choose to defect from diet culture, like, you have to be somewhat of a rebel. I definitely worked on releasing other people's judgments of me through that process. If I were going to become comfortable with my body when I wasn't restricting or suppressing my weight, then, and that body was not going to conform to probably what, you know, a lot of people close to me would have liked it to have been, you definitely develop a strength and a resilience to judgment. And also a kind of feeling of like, I trust myself, and I know this is what's in my best interest. And I, as much as, you know, stopping dieting and choosing to embrace a bigger body is, it's really scary, and at times can be exhausting and hard, it's also massively rewarding. You know, being able to just live the kind of life that you want to live, and take care of yourself in the way in which you, like, we all know what it is that we want and need. It might be buried under lots of layers, but, you know, we are experts of our own bodies, our own lives. So I have that to be grateful for. You know, I knew that I could trust my own judgment, I think. Even though there was part of me that was like, well, you know, I could just have a brain tumor. I could be just completely deluded with all of this, because if any of you out there have, you know, questioned your sexuality, you'll know that you're kind of like, oh, but I'm like, maybe this isn't true. Like, maybe I'm just making all this up. Maybe I'm just bored, and this is like a fantasy that keeps me, I don't know, excited. Or this, you know, there's so much can go through your brain, and it can be such a lonely place. And I hear that a lot from my clients who are trying to divorce themselves from diet culture, and none of their pals are doing that. And everyone's talking about losing weight and bikini bodies and, you know, Weight Watchers. And you can feel like such an outsider. And thankfully, I found other people who were on a similar page, maybe not as overtly in terms of separating themselves from diet culture, but at least we're not committing their lives to it. But yeah, being a sort of 40, what age would I have been at the time? 43? Yeah, being a 43-year-old woman and kind of question your sexuality, there doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of resources out there. I think a lot of the resources are geared towards young people. But of course, being my age, it's, you know, there's not, what I understand now is there's a whole lot of women in their 40s questioning their sexuality, but I didn't know any of them. I was dealing with this alone for sure. And similarly, right, when I speak to countless people upon people upon people who are struggling with food and body, and everybody thinks it's just them. Everybody thinks it's just them who can't control themselves around food and have the shame of certain behaviors. But oh my God, there's so many of us. There's so many of us. And, you know, I don't quite want to say cut to now, because it's been such a journey over the last year and 4 months, 5 months. But as hard as like some of the points in this journey have been, telling my parents, you know, who love my ex-husband, and friends, which, oh my God, like, I just remember thinking, God, I've chosen great friends. I definitely reconnected with a lot of people. And it's amazing when you kind of bear your own truth, how much other people share their truth. And I think I hadn't realized that, like, being such a private person does come with costs. You know, I think it's through vulnerability that we connect with each other. I certainly see that in the groups that I run when people start, you know, find the courage to speak about what they're struggling with. It helps other people. It helps other people to find that strength to name their own demons. And I'd say my world has started to become bigger again. I have really nurtured friendships. I've sought out new connections. I have a new partner, not so new, been together over a year now. And, you know, through my relationship with her, I've learned so much more about myself. And I think in any of these journeys, when it's, whether it's anti-diet or sexuality, like, you learn stuff about yourself that you didn't even know was there, you didn't even know existed. But especially in relationship, it's, you know, I've done so many hard things in this last year, particularly when it comes to vulnerability. And also, I think, you know, in my healing journey with body stuff has been really interesting, being in a bigger body and entering into a new relationship when the world would tell us that, you know, that that's going to be an easier process when you're in a smaller body. But I mean, obviously, I connected with someone who is sees the stuff around food and body very similarly to how I do, and is very fat positive. And therefore, it's been such a incredibly healing journey to be so loved and accepted in the body that you are in, that you exist in, and to experience so much joy and pleasure. And combined with also, you know, particularly last year, I think I'm in a much steadier place this year, but last year, experiencing so much grief and sadness, but also so much joy and so much fun. It's such a strange thing to hold both of those at once. And I think a lot of the time when you're moving away from dieting, you can experience that. You can experience glimmers of that what liberation feels like, the kind of empowerment of not being caged anymore, that feeling of like growth and lightness and happiness and freedom, but then also experiencing feelings of grief and feeling sad and the difficult feelings if your body changes. It's like holding all of that at one time can feel like an absolute roller coaster, and it can be really exhausting, and it can really play on your mental health for sure. And I think that's so important that we have tools to be able to help us through those periods and have people around us to help us through those periods. And I'm really thankful I've had both. And I want to give anti-diet work the credit for that. It helped me to build connection and build community. And it helped me regulate my nervous system. It helped me feel my feelings and my emotions. It's been such a groundwork for this next phase of becoming, I guess, more true, more authentic, more in line with who I am. And I don't know if that's who I've always been or who just I am now. I think sexuality can be this fluid thing. I can't say that I'm of the thinking where I was like, I was born gay. I'm not even sure if I use that word gay. I'm reluctant, I suppose, to kind of label it. But I definitely know being in a same-sex relationship feels incredibly true and honest. And yeah, incredibly loving. Incredibly loving. I'm aware I've been talking for about 45 minutes at this point. Well, it depends how much I'm going to edit out, but maybe not for you folks, but for me right now. And yeah, I guess I'm just thinking what else I want to share with you. And I think, you know, I suppose what I want to share is what's maybe helped in some ways, that or lessons that I've learned. And I think one of the biggest lessons is when the things that I struggle most with, the things that I when I feel that tension or that anxiety, or I'm just struggling with my emotions, most of the time it's because I am standing in such judgment over what it is that I'm feeling. I don't know if any of you folks feel that. And I think that's when I'm least able to access self-compassion, when I'm judging so much of what I'm feeling. And I think this past year has been, through, I think, my friendships deepening, my new relationship, therapy, I think I'm realizing what self-compassion is in a whole different area. I think when it comes to food and body stuff, I am well versed in holding compassion for myself. I have a lot of that. But it's not so easy to translate it into other areas of my life. And I think when I've been experiencing really human emotions of shame or embarrassment or judgment, it's really hard to access self-compassion. And it really helps to be around people who don't judge, who don't think it's shameful what it is that you're experiencing, and will just sit with you in that, you know, without trying to fix or sort, and just sit with you in that. And I think another thing, I suppose, that I want to share is, if any of you follow me on social media, I'm laughing because you'll know from this podcast, I have a really tricky relationship with social media, but it's something that I've intentionally stepped back from this year. I crop up every now and then, but the weight of that, the expectation I think that I had of myself and who I had to be on social media or how I had to show up, felt really big, and it was something I needed to let go of. And also, I guess, in the spirit of transparency too, running a business whereby I'm holding space for other people, it takes a lot of capacity and a lot of emotional capacity. It takes a lot of steadiness. And I certainly last year didn't have a whole lot of that. I had a limited supply of that. And I have enough self-awareness to know that. So, you know, since 2019, my coaching and yoga teaching business, I was doing it. It was a full-time gig for me. But last year, I chose to scale it back. And I moved back into the world of interior design, which, as I was saying to you earlier, that was my degree, my first degree and my first career. And I have to say, it's been such a relief in some ways, being able to sort of do something that you are experienced in, really knowledgeable in, known for being those things, I feel confident in that area. It doesn't feel particularly onerous. Yeah, it's been a game changer for my mental health because running your own business means you need to show up to market yourself. And all I had the capacity for was showing up for my clients. And that was my priority. I scaled back group work. I scaled back my yoga classes. I scaled back to the bare minimum and I showed up to the best that I could, which I think was, enough for sure. But all the other stuff, hustling for business, showing up on social media, sending emails, running master classes, I just let all of that go. I let it all go. Which again, I think I have judgment around. I think other people have opinions around, but I knew it was right for my mental health, and it really was. I also started to go back to college last year to study to become a therapist. So I was juggling a lot of balls. And it's just a case of prioritization. And doing this podcast has been such a tonic. It's been so great to be able to show up and offer these conversations and continue to learn from Tamsin and all the great guests that we have on. And I love talking, so it's really easy for me. So that's why this has stayed afloat, really, I suppose. But I share that with you. I think I just want to be honest. I think, and you know what's really interesting is the weight of feeling like you need to show up on social media and show up on email marketing and do all the workshops and do all the networking. The weight of that, is so great if any of you run your own business. And when I give myself the permission not to do that, my business didn't suffer. I only take on a very limited amount of private clients, but I'm not short of inquiries and I'm not short of clients. And it's really interesting how actually none of that stuff mattered. I wish I'd learned that a long time ago, or maybe I needed to put in the years of work first to get myself to that point. But it's kind of ironic. But yeah, I share that with you just in the spirit of transparency, but to also just say to you, it's another example of, I think, what other people's expectations are of you, the expectations that you have for yourself. Sometimes what you want and what you need are different things. And I very much wanted to continue to grow my business and move it forward. But what I needed actually was stability. I needed just to be, to slow down and just to steady the ship for a while. And yeah, that is sometimes a really tough call. Tough decision to make, but it's definitely been one that's benefited me. So I think I'm going to sign off at this point. It's been a bit rambly. It's been a bit all over the place, but I think I just wanted to share, and I guess to name some of the things and to kind of share my vulnerability, maybe. I think a lot of the time people think coaches and therapists and things like have their life together, and like none of us do. None of us do. It ebbs and flows how sort of together or steady we feel, but we all have our stuff going on for sure. And I'm always in such admiration of the people who do come forward to say, this is what's been going on, and these are the choices that I'm making. And, I find it so empowering. And I have such respect for those people. So I guess this is my version of it. And yeah, and I think maybe too for like my own, I was going to say my own records. That sounds so formal, but I kind of, it's like a way of documenting where I am in my life. And maybe in 5 years, 10 years, I'll listen back and be like, wow, that was a real point in time. So yeah, I'm going to call it, I'm going to leave it there. And yeah, I want to just send out so much love and compassion to anybody, any of you folks out there who are struggling with your relationship with food, your relationship with your body, your relationships with other people, big questions around your life, your life's purpose, fulfillment, sexuality, gender, whatever's on your mind. Like we've all got it. We've all got something going on. And yeah, I just want to acknowledge that and say that, yeah, me too. Me too. All right, folks, take care. And I guess next time you hear from me, I shall have my co-host with me again. And we'll keep going with this anti-diet conversation. Thanks for being here. As always, if you appreciate this, rate and review. And I appreciate you listening. Take care, folks. Bye.